President Obama's 2015 budget request calls for more money for federal science agencies. The National Institutes of Health would receive a 1% increase, and the National Science Foundation will receive a 3% increase. Some critics say that's not enough to help the science community bounce back to its pre-sequester levels. Here with more is Ben Korb. He's the Director of Public Affairs for the American Society for Biochemistry and Molecular Biology. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. So tell us how, well, first of all, give us an idea of who is in your society and what is their interest in federal research.
Sure. So the American Society for Biochemistry and Molecular Biology represents 12,000 scientists who are located, 8,000, 9,000 or so are here in the United States. The remaining membership is outside of the U.S. Their interest when it comes to federal research is predominantly at the NIH and the NSF. They are, for the most part, academic researchers, researchers at universities across the country who are reliant on federal funding for their basic research. Most of them are not doing research targeted at a specific disease or illness, but a lot of them are doing research to understand the underlying mechanism of disease, understand how the cell works and how, for instance, mutations in a cell or in a gene impact cancer and many other diseases.
And do they predominantly work in academia, say in medical institutions, as opposed to some of the companies that are well known in this area?
That's true. I mean, we certainly do represent some industry members. Some of them are government scientists, scientists on campus at NIH who are doing the same research, but by and large, they are academic researchers.
So in reading a recent testimony, not testimony, but a speech that was given by Senator Dick Durbin to a group, I think to your group, actually, he said that the United States is falling behind relative to the number of people engaged in the science. The age of them and the funding they have. What does the society see there going on?
There's a few problems going on. As everybody's aware, we certainly hit an economic problem here in the United States, and Congress has taken several actions to try to change the course and certainly change our debt and deficit situation. As a result, investments in science have been cut. Not as drastically as some of the other programs that exist and that are in the federal doles, but science has been paying a price through austerity measures like sequester and the Budget Control Act caps on discretionary spending that were put in place a couple of years ago. That's happening at a time when other countries like China, India, Singapore, Germany, even to some extent France and Australia, are investing more money, percent of GDP-wise, in these biomedical sciences than, the United States is today.
And so the United States' share of spending worldwide then is declining relative to those other nations?
Yeah, it is declining, particularly the federal investment there. Now, again, we still do, dollar for dollar. We are investing more than many other countries on the planet. So it's not as if we're not investing in science, but we're certainly not keeping pace with our global competitors. And at a time where, the world is not flat, science goes on everywhere. In a world where, funding opportunities, scientists will go where the funding opportunities are. And unfortunately, fewer and fewer of those opportunities are opening up here in our country.
And so what does it mean if a greater number of basic discoveries are made outside of the United States versus inside? Does that mean that those countries commercialize them faster?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of one of the problems that we look at is its competitiveness. Is if you're in China, for instance, if you have the money and the freedom to do basic discovery research and kind of you're funded to see where your science takes you, to see what you understand, as you start to unlock some of the mysteries of how the cell works, companies that are around you are going to go ahead and invest and take those discoveries and translate them into clinical products, drugs, treatments, devices. So what we end up with is having to compete with other countries that are just investing more because the discoveries are happening within those borders.
And what about the relative ages of people doing this research? Senator Durbin said that in 82, 18% of NIH primary investigators were under the age of 36. Now only 3% of them are under 36. Is this a group of aging people, and do we need to bring more people in? And I guess the corollary there is, would increased federal spending encourage more younger scientists to enter this whole biochemistry and molecular field?
Yeah, so it's a twofold solution, really. One is, and Senator Durbin hit the nail on the head. The average age of the NIH investigator for the first time that they get a grant from the NIH is about 38 years old today. That's a very long time to wait for your first time to really get vindicated and funded by the federal government to do some of your research, and that's troubling. Some of our members, one member in particular I think of is Craig Mello, who won the Nobel Prize for his research in understanding how RNA works. His grant, which in fact funded the research that won him the Nobel Prize, he got funded when he was in his early 30s. And so if he was doing his research today, he would not have even been funded because the environment is what it is. And so that's difficult. And to your point on whether increases in investment equals increases in researchers, the NIH's budget was doubled, and we're all very grateful for that, starting in the late 1990s and going through the early 2000s. And we see from that a really precipitous increase in the number of researchers. And so what we've done is, and by the way, since that doubling period ended around 2002, funding for the NIH has been relatively flat. And when you factor in for inflation, it's actually been declining for nearly a decade now at a clip of, 1 to 3% annually. So the investigators that we trained off of these research grants in the late 90s are ready. They're prepared to open a lab. They're prepared to do research. But now they're finding that the resources that were there when they were students and trainees simply aren't there today.
We're speaking with Benjamin Korb. He's Director of Public Affairs for the American Society of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology. And so as this all proceeds, I guess the question becomes, what I wanted to ask you about specifically is there's a trend in the government. This is being driven by the Office of Management and Budget. And they are looking for greater accountability, greater performance standards in the whole grant-making apparatus across everything that the government spends on grants. Is there a danger that basic research that's granted could get kind of a low score because it doesn't always pay off the way people hope the first time around?
Yeah, you're right, and that's a problem, and that's something that we're constantly trying to make the argument for. Researchers at the NIH are kind of pound for pound some of the more critical. They're good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars and of the investment that they get. You don't often find, and of course everybody can find outliers, but you don't often find lots of waste and abuse inside of an NIH grant just because of the way in which the research is done and the costs that are involved. The problem with the discovery research is exactly that. An NIH grant that's funded today to one of my researchers at the University of Nebraska, anywhere in the country, the way that that discovery is going to be translated into, say, a drug, we may be 20 years from that point in time. So it's a long time, and it's an early investment at an early stage in the process. And that's why you don't find a lot of private industry investing in this basic research, is because they're looking at return on the investment. They have shareholders and stakeholders and boards of directors that they have to be respondent to. And, frankly, a business is there to help people, but also they have to turn a profit. That's how it works. So they're pulling out of this area of research. So it really is important that the federal government go ahead and invest now. A great example, I've spoken several times with the director of OSTP, Dr. John Holdren, and a great example that he uses is the research that was in the National Science Foundation invested in, the research that led to the laser and the development of the laser. And the inventor of the laser never could have imagined that today in 2014, a laser is used to make sure that our paintings on our walls are level, to read information off of discs like CDs and DVDs and Blu-rays, to point to things on a wall in a conference, as well as, for the military operation, military usage that we're finding today.
And let me ask you this, as the funding for NIH and the National Science Foundation kind of drifts downward, at least in buying power, if not in absolute dollars, what does that do to the ability of the staff there to ingest, evaluate, and kind of make the choices that are well-informed, scientifically sound for what it is that they do decide to grant money for?
It's difficult. Now, the way that NIH grants are awarded is through the peer review process. So, in fact, it's NIH-funded researchers. So it's not federal employees, but the researchers out there who review grants. So it's an expert on the mitochondria, and a group of experts on mitochondria who are reviewing grants that would be researching the mitochondria, because who's going to know that area better than that group of scientists? they're the ones who blindly review these grants and then, you know, score them and determine them on, and award them based on merit. What we're finding is researchers are having to spend more time, one, applying for grants to fund their research, and then to do these the peer reviews that they have to do, just in order to keep the engines moving. And they're spending less time in the laboratory doing the work and doing the research that they'd like to do.
So in other words, the whole community of the ecosystem surrounding a given discipline is shrinking, and that makes everybody have to work harder, and you get somehow less efficiency in the science process.
Absolutely, yes.
All right, so at 1%, I mean, does the society have an idea, or do you have an idea of what would be a reasonable percentage increase if somehow you could convince the administration and Congress to do so? We said 1% for NIH. What would make sense?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. And, you know, let's be clear. We wouldn't reject the 1% increase that was proposed by the White House. And we appreciate that in difficult budgeting times, the fact that the budget was even proposed to go up is a good thing. And so we don't want to appear as though we're inappreciative of that sort of thing. The American Society for ASBMB and other biomedical research groups are calling on Congress to fund the NIH at a level of $32 billion, which is closer to about that 3% increase. 3% is, on average, the rate of inflation for biomedical research, the cost of, not only for the equipment that it takes to do the research, but for the people who do it and just kind of the general overhead rates that exist. That's what we're calling for today. Now, we could all make a strong argument for increases in the fold of, you know, 3 to 5%, you know, not only cover for inflation, but then allow for actual growth. The difficulty is, you know, and I mentioned this earlier, the austerity measures that are in place today because of the Budget Control Act, the threat of sequester next fiscal year, trying to recover from sequester last fiscal year, plus the caps that are put on discretionary spending, make any real growth and real investments in this area incredibly difficult to do.
And I guess you're in favor of this Senator Durbin's proposal for the American Cures Act, which would create a trust fund to support mandatory spending for NIH, CDC, the health programs and the defense departments, and VA prosthetics research. What are you hearing on the Hill about whether that has any traction or not?
We are incredibly appreciative of Senator Durbin for putting forth that bill and that proposal, and for really being a champion for biomedical research in the country. And so we are beyond pleased that he's taken such an interest, a personal interest, in moving things forward. There are concerns about investing in and funding biomedical research on this kind of trust fund model. One is, you know, frankly, it's compensatory budgeting and policy and management. You know, the problem that we have isn't support for biomedical research. There are, you know, there's an overwhelming majority of Congress that supports the NIH and that would invest in the NIH. The problem is the appropriations process is broken down. You know, appropriators aren't allowed to appropriate appropriately today. And that's one of the things that we're trying to work on and trying to fix through things like repealing the BCA caps and the threat of sequester. If regular order could take place, we're pretty confident that, you know, and if the system weren't broken, we're pretty confident that investments in the NIH could happen and could happen in an easier way. So we have concerns that by creating this trust fund option, we run the risk of losing normal appropriations moving forward, which may erode our base while we're not even realizing it. So we would rather see Senator Durbin and the rest of his colleagues up on the Hill fix the appropriations process, get back to regular order so we can see investments through the appropriations process.
All right. Ben Korb is Director of Public Affairs for the American Society for Biochemistry and Molecular Biology. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me.